apologize for the late start today. We have been having some internet connectivity troubles here at the State Senate, and we're working on those. At this time, we have one committee member who's trying to join us remotely and also a testifier. I think that what we're going to do is go ahead and proceed and keep trying our connection, but we are going to be able to go ahead and move forward regardless. But anyway, that's the explanation for our late start. Welcome, everybody. The Senate Labor Committee is called to order. I will note that we do have a quorum, and today on our agenda we have three bills. The first of them is Senate File 4019, which is brought to us by Senator Mohammed. Welcome, Senator Mohammed, to the Senate Labor Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It is good to be back here with all of you. For the Senate File 4019, I have an amendment, an author's amendment, the A1 amendment, which would reference the statutes on some of the language in the bill.
Okay, very good. Senator Mohammed has brought an author's A1 amendment. Senator Marty moves the adoption of the A1 amendment. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say no. All right, the A1 amendment is adopted. Senator, to your bill.
Thank you so much for hearing my bill today. Good afternoon to all of you. Before you, Senate File 4019, a bill that would transform Minnesota's statewide minimum wage into a living wage in today's economy. This bill would raise Minnesota's minimum wage to $15 an hour by August 1st of this year, and it would increase $1.25 a year until we reach $20 in the year 2028. It would also remove the 2.5% inflation cap that has prevented our minimum wage from keeping up with the cost of living in recent years. In the last 2 years alone, the minimum wage's purchasing power has dropped by 12.4%. In fact, members, if the minimum wage did rise in step with productivity growth since the year 1968, it would almost be $21.50 an hour today. The $10.85 minimum wage we have today is a reflection of an economy that no longer exists. The fight for 15 happened almost a decade ago, and despite the steady rise in the cost of living since the year 2012, our state laws have left our minimum wage stagnant, trapping workers in an outdated reality. My bill would bring our numbers back to reflect our present-day reality. $15 an hour starting this August 2024, and then $1.25 until we get to the year 2028, and by then it should be $20 an hour. In recent years, inflation rates have soared, placing unprecedented strain on workers' finances. The surge has almost pushed many full-time employees into the cycle of living paycheck to paycheck and forcing families to make an agonizing choices between necessities like paying for their bills and providing meal for their children. That inflation combined with our state's tight labor economy also means that we have seen more employers offering higher wages to attract workers. Businesses are realizing that $10.85 isn't enough to compete for workers anymore. Our laws should also recognize that. That's why now is the time to increase Minnesota's minimum wage to make sure as wages and costs continue to rise, no workers are left behind. All workers deserve wages that reflect the dignity of their workers. No one who's working a full-time job should struggle to afford basic needs like food and shelter. Updating our minimum wages to reflect the true cost of living is how we'll make Minnesota the best place to live, work, and raise a family for all Minnesotans. Thank you. And I have some testifiers with me, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Mohammed. We did have someone scheduled to testify virtually, but because of our technical difficulties this afternoon, I'm going to go ahead and move on to the next person who we had listed, which was Rod Adams. And following Rod Adams, we have John Reynolds. And if people wanted to kind of come up to the table as your name is called, And then when it's your turn to speak, if you would please go ahead and introduce yourself for the record, and then proceed with your testimony. Welcome to the Senate Labor Committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair and committee members. My name is Rod Adams. I am the Executive Director and founder of the New Justice Project Minnesota. I also want to thank Senator Zainab Mohammed for the opportunity to speak in support of Senate File 4019, which at this moment is such a crucial legislation. As a former low-wage worker who began my journey in the labor movement in the Fight for 15 in Minneapolis and St. Paul, I know firsthand the struggles of what living vicariously looks like and what it feels like. Now, in my current role, I have the opportunity to not only empathize with other workers, but to organize with them, struggle with them, and fight for them. Our membership at the New Justice Project includes dozens of workers who are in most cases working 2 to 3 jobs. And also working 2 to 3 jobs and unable to secure housing, provide adequate food for their families. And because of this, most of these workers don't receive health insurance from their employers and are sometimes choosing between life-saving medication and a light bill. But it doesn't have to be this way. Also, according to a study from MIT, we know that the living wage in the state of Minnesota for a single person with 0 children is just over $21. And for a person with 1 child, that balloons to $36.13. So in supporting this legislation, our members and other workers are not asking for some absurd amount of money. They're asking for the ability to thrive and not just survive. They're looking to have a job that provides them with dignity and the opportunity to support themselves and their families without falling short every month. And to be clear, workers are not alone in this fight against stagnant wages. There's a growing movement around the country around statewide minimum wage legislation in 6 states, with California being increasingly close to passing a $20 minimum wage. So with that, Minnesota has the opportunity to lead, as it's done so many times before, on providing what for most workers will be one of the first wage increases they have seen over a decade outside of the metro of Minneapolis and St. Paul. Finally, in the grips of the global pandemic, we called on these very same workers to risk their lives and keep the economy moving through one of the darkest times in modern history. We called them essential because they were, and so is this legislation. So with that, I ask that you pass on Senate File 4019. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have John Reynolds, followed by David Perdomo. Welcome to the Senate Labor Committee. If you'd please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair McEwen. I'm John Reynolds, the State Director for the National Federation of Independent Business in Minnesota. We represent over 10,000 small business owners in every corner of the state. NFIB opposes Senate File 4019 because it's an unaffordable and unfunded mandate on small business owners. It's important to remember that the picture on Main Street is very different from the picture on Wall Street. While many big businesses saw record years during and after the pandemic, small businesses struggled. Many are only now getting back to their pre-pandemic levels, and some have still not recovered. One of the biggest challenges they face is high labor cost, which more than 1 in 10 small business owners say is their single biggest problem. A $20 an hour minimum wage will only make their problem worse and likely put many mom and pop businesses out of business. It will also have the opposite of the intended effect for many workers, especially in retail and hospitality. We know this from the Minneapolis Federal Reserve's most recent look at the $15 an hour minimum wage mandate in Minneapolis and St. Paul. The Federal Reserve found precipitous drops in the number of retail and restaurant jobs in both cities due to those minimum wage increases, as well as significant reductions in hours worked and lower average earnings for workers in those industries. Given this proposed increase is even steeper and will impact cities and counties with lower household incomes and less ability to absorb the cost increases caused by this wage mandate, we expect the outcomes to be even worse than what the Federal Reserve found in Minneapolis and St. Paul. Senate File 4019 also means higher property taxes and a more expensive state government, since all levels of government will experience higher labor costs. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you for your testimony. And next we have David Perdomo, followed by Faith Mobley. Welcome. If you would please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is David Perdomo. En el año 2020 inicié mi trabajo como organizador comunitario en Rochester y en el Southeast Minnesota y comencé a tener un mayor acercamiento a las necesidades y sueños de mi comunidad.
Hello, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is David Perdomo, In 2020, I began my work as a community organizer in Rochester and Southeast Minnesota, and I began to have a greater connection to the needs and dreams of my community.
En mi trabajo como organizador he conocido historias de familias latinas que por años han residido en Minnesota y que han son trabajadores en diferentes industrias como restaurantes, hoteles, limpieza, construcción, manufactura, empacadoras de comida y granjas. Y no importa cuál es su área de trabajo, se puede observar la desigualdad en cuanto a salarios. Muchas familias tienen que manejar muchas millas y salir de sus pueblos buscando un mejor salario.
In my work as an organizer, I have encountered stories of Latino families who have resided in Minnesota for years and who are workers in different industries such as restaurants, hotels, cleaning, construction, manufacturing, food packing, and farms. And no matter what their area of work, you can see the disparity in wages. Many families have to drive many miles and leave their hometown in search of a better wage.
Y la historia que viene a mi mente es de una familia que vive en la ciudad de Dodge Center. Es un padre de familia que debe levantarse a las 4 de la mañana para manejar hacia Minneapolis. La diferencia de salario que existe entre las Twin Cities y el área rural ha motivado a este padre de familia a hacer un gran sacrificio de tiempo, manejar 3 horas al día y 200 millas diarias.
The story that comes to mind is a family living in Dodge Center. The father of the family must get up at 4 a.m. to drive to Minneapolis. The wage differential that exists between the Twin Cities and rural areas has motivated this father to make a huge time sacrifice, driving 3 hours a day and driving almost 200 miles a day.
Y muchos trabajadores en Olmsted County reciben, o Dodge County también reciben un salario mínimo estatal de $10.85, un nivel que no lo sostiene comparado con el salario mínimo en Minneapolis, que es $15.57. Y otros trabajadores de la área de construcción aguantan disparidades similares como impacto secundario de esta división económica, y el resultado es más que la conveniencia para viajar. Significa que otras actividades económicas están saliendo de las áreas rurales a mercados más grandes. Y dado esta realidad, COPAL estamos participando este día para apoyar que se incremente el salario mínimo en el estado de Minnesota y así brindar una mejor calidad de vida para las familias trabajadoras en Minnesota.
Many workers in Olmsted or Dodge County receive the state minimum wage of $10.85, a level that does not support them, compared to a Minneapolis minimum wage of $15.57. Others, such as construction workers, endure similar disparities as a secondary impact of this economic divide. The result is more than the inconvenience of commuting. It means that other economic activities are relieving rural areas for larger markets. Given this reality, COPAL is participating in this day to support an increase in the minimum wage in the state of Minnesota to provide a better quality of life for Minnesota's working families.
Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Faith Mobley, followed by Dorimar Cabrera. Welcome to the Senate Labor Committee. If you'd please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Members, my name is Faith Mobley. I live in Brainerd. I was raised in Brainerd and have lived there almost my entire life. I have worked in the grocery retail industry for 13 years, and I'm a member of the UFCW Local 663. I helped open the Brainerd Cubs store several years ago. Now I work at Pequot Lake Super Value as a front-end manager. I've pretty much done it all in grocery retail. Opened new stores, bookkeeping, general merchandise, the pharmacy, and even took care of the gas pumps. On top of that, I am raising 4 kids with my partner of 9 years, David. I am also serving on our union's bargaining committee as we seek a new contract with better wages and benefits. The current minimum wage of $10.25 in Minnesota is not good enough for workers to provide for their families and have job security. As a union member, my coworkers and I fight for better wages and benefits in every contract. We all see how much money these large companies are making. I keep Minnesota communities fed with the work I do. I'm here to speak up and fight for all workers in Minnesota, especially those without a union. We all work hard every day and deserve to be paid more. A $20 minimum wage would help my coworkers provide financial security for ourselves and our families. My personal thing is there is so much turnover, it is hard to keep good people. Yes, and even in the Brainerd Lakes area. A $20 minimum wage would help with that. Please support this bill, and thank you for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Doramar Cabrera and then Yashe Williams. Welcome to the Senate Labor Committee. If you'd please introduce yourself and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair McEwen and members. I'm Doramar Cabrera. I'm here today to ask you to raise Minnesota's minimum wage to $20 an hour. I'd like to share that this time last year, I was working as a building technician in a high-rise apartment building. I earned $17.50 an hour, which wasn't always enough to cover bills for me and my three wonderful children. Then a health issue made me leave that position, and I was on short-term disability for a few months. When I was healed and ready to work again, I found packaging work in a warehouse, earning $20 an hour. Because short-term disability payments are so low, I had fallen behind on a few bills. My birthday came and went, and we had no money to celebrate it. But when I was making $20 an hour, in just 3 months, I maintained housing for myself and my children. I fed everyone, clothed everyone, maintained my vehicle, and even got my children involved in activities like cheerleading, basketball, and boxing. And I was able to catch up on all my bills. And then my fourth grader was pushed off a swing at school and broke her wrist. I had to stay home with her for a week, and the warehouse job fired me. I found a different job paying $17.50 an hour. It's been a struggle ever since. My vehicle has also had additional issues, and I can't afford to get them fixed until another paycheck or two. I had to get a ride here today as I speak. I'm worried about not being able to make ends meet and always ending the month catching up on one bill by not paying another. It causes a lot of stress, lost sleep, and worry. I work hard, and I'm trying to do the right thing. Everyone in Minnesota deserves to earn a wage where they can pay their bills, save a little for the future, and have enough left over to celebrate their own birthday. I've seen how $20 an hour can make that happen for me and my family, and I hope you make it happen for every worker in Minnesota. Thank you for hearing my story.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Yashe Williams, followed by Keisha Neely. Welcome to the Senate Labor Committee. If you'd please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you for having me. My name is Yashia Williams, and I'm a member of the New Justice Project, a single mother and a housing justice advocate. My job is to work directly with vulnerable adults. I actually love my job. I find so much joy in helping others find homes that they can call their own. But the harsh reality is that we live in a world where a person like myself, whose role is to help others find housing, can barely afford housing myself. When I moved into my two-bedroom back in 2017, the rent requirement was 2.5 times the rent in order to qualify. I couldn't qualify for that on my own because I only made $15 an hour. I had to put my 18-year-old daughter on the lease in order to be able to afford it. My only option at that time, like I said, was to put her on the lease just so we could have a roof over our head. No child should have to worry about bills and rent at 18 years old. So today I'm asking, I'm still making less, I'm barely making ends meet. For example, I was just forced to leave my home of 7 years. They terminated my lease due to they wanted to remodel and raise the rent, and it wasn't going to be affordable. They wanted to go up to $13.25 a month. So you can imagine how devastating that was to me because I was back at square one. This time, without the help of my daughter. I have also a 16-year-old son that I take care of as a single mother. I searched for months, all while getting up, going to work every day, and helping my clients as well find housing. As soon as I clocked out, I was looking for myself housing. I felt kind of hopeless at times, but I didn't give up. I was actually able to put in overtime, work 60 to 65 hours a week, so that my check stubs would reflect that I could afford 3 times the rent when I was looking for my new apartment. As of last month, I did find an apartment, and we were able to move. I'm happy about that. But imagine if I was making $20 an hour. It wouldn't have been hardly an issue to get qualified for an apartment when they require you to make 2.5 to 3 times the rent. Passing the bill would mean so much to me, as well as my clients, who most of them barely make $11 an hour. Often they have to choose between their medication and their rent, which is why a lot of them are in situations where they are being evicted because they can't pay their rent. So sacrificing your health to keep a roof over your head, then being too sick to go into work, I mean, because you don't have the medicine. This is a vicious cycle that I see every single day, both in my professional and personal life, and it's clearly time for a change. I hope that that starts today. Thank you for hearing my testimony.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Keisha Neely, followed by Bree Richardson. Welcome to the Senate Labor Committee. If you'd please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
My name's Keisha Neely. I am a member of the New Justice Project. I'm a single mother, and I am impacted by the an impacted community member. I'm currently a college student. I have a 15-year-old, and he'll also be going to college. I recently just started making $20 an hour, but just to be clear, that is still not enough. And expecting to take care of a 15-year-old that will eat you out of house and home, as well as myself, it is not easy to pay bills and car insurance and fund my own college, as well as his. In the next 2-3 years, it's going to be a tight squeeze, as it's been. I've been in college since 2021, and even trying to prepare for him to go is a struggle at $20. Today's minimum wage, if I was making minimum wage, I wouldn't even be able to afford a studio apartment. In 2 years, I don't know if my son will be able to afford a studio apartment, just being at college and his own personal expenses. The economic gap continues to place people like me in limbo because I'm close to 20 or at 20, so I make too much to get assistance, but not enough to live. I'm just working to survive at this point. I can't go on vacation if I wanted to. I can't put my son in sports whenever the time comes. I have to sacrifice a bill for that. And that's kind of unfair, so I hope you guys take that in consideration. There are days that I choose to pay car insurance to get to work or put groceries in my house for the week. You know, my son doesn't get to support his dreams of being in, like, the STEM program whenever he can, you know, I can sacrifice a payment to make sure he can go out of state or, you know, have the supplies he needs for that. And I shouldn't have to pick and choose, just to be clear. I'm 36 years old, and I've been working at the same place off and on for about 6 years, and I think I've received at most $2 raise in that time frame. I did not think that I would be fighting for $20 minimum wage as my son started work over the summertime. Again, he's 15, and our checks were the same every month at the end of the summer. And I do security, you know, and he's 15, but, you know. Passing the bill of SF 419 in the state of Minnesota would be a step in the right direction. It gives people like me a chance for necessities, because the working class community, like myself and the members in my community, deserve recognition and a livable wage every day. During the pandemic, during a regular day, during the night, I'm security officer at night, everywhere. It will give people hope towards a brighter tomorrow, and it will give people in my community the opportunity for a better future, like especially my son. So thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Bree Richardson, followed by Lydia Caldwell. Welcome. If you please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, Bree Richardson. Good afternoon, members of the Labor Committee. My name is Bree Richardson, and I'm here today to share my story, not necessarily as an individual, but as one of millions of Minnesotans that are fighting to make ends meet every day. Shortly before the pandemic, my mother had a series of devastating health issues that left her vulnerable and unable to care for herself any longer. She was a care worker her entire life that also struggled to make ends meet. I'm proud of my decision to dramatically change my life. Tess?
Here, just a second. Let me make sure. Are we good?
Hello?
Okay. I think that we're getting connected now. And I think that we can go ahead. We'll Hello? Continue with the live testimony. For those who are just joining us online, welcome. We apologize for the technical difficulties we've had in getting you connected today and us connected to you. We are currently taking testimony on Senate File 4019, and we have a couple more testifiers who are here in person. We're going to just finish with that, and then we'll go. We have an online testifier as well. So I'm sorry for the interruption, Ms. Richardson, if you would please perhaps bring us back a sentence or two, and then we'll be right back on board. Thank you.
I can do that. So I was saying, shortly before the pandemic, my mother had a series of devastating health issues that left her vulnerable and unable to care for herself. She was a care worker her entire life that also struggled to make ends meet. I'm proud of my decision to dramatically change my life in order to care for her, but it's not been easy. Until a few short months ago, when my union, SEIU, won a raise, I was working for minimum wage as her caregiver. We live in subsidized housing in St. Paul, but in order to afford basic things like food and rent, I need to work a second job. I've worked hard to ensure I'm doing all the right things to just barely survive, let alone thrive. Living paycheck to paycheck is my very real experience. We are constantly at risk of not affording the basics of food and shelter, and the stress of going hungry or falling into homelessness looms over me at all times. I'll get there. I ask you all today, as a union member working two jobs, living in sustainable housing, what more should I be doing to not just survive but to thrive in this beautiful state of Minnesota? Meanwhile, I've watched the wealth of corporations grow at record rate during the pandemic, all off the backs of essential workers that put their lives at risk every day to just barely survive. It leaves many of us asking, is this fair? Is this system rigged? A basic increase in minimum wage to $20 is needed in order for people like me to survive, and it's one step to getting us back to an even playing field in our communities. Furthermore, linking minimum wage to inflation would truly put us on the road to millions of people, for millions of people being able to thrive in Minnesota. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Ms. Caldwell, I'm going to go on line real quick because I want to make sure that we get this. We have a one testifier online, and I want, just in case we have more trouble. Hello, we have Saru Jarayaman. Hello, can you hear us all right?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
We can hear you, but if you can make sure to speak up, we're going to make sure we have you turned up all the way. We can hear you, but it was just a little bit faint. So if you just make sure to speak clearly as you can, and if you'd just introduce yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony. Welcome to the Senate Labor Committee this afternoon.
Thank you so much, Chair McEwen. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you. Thank you.
Great. Well, thank you for having me. My name is Saru Jayaraman. I am the co-founder and president of One Fair Wage. We're a national organization of 300,000 restaurant and service workers. I also founded the Restaurant Opportunity Center, or ROC, and I teach at UC Berkeley. I run the Food Labor Research Center at UC Berkeley. I've written about 5 books on these issues of fair wages, including my latest, One Fair Wage. We are witnessing right now around the country an incredible moment post-pandemic of marketplace upheaval. where during and post-pandemic, we've watched millions of low-wage workers reject low-wage jobs and demand more, and businesses in the low-wage sector actually respond by raising wages, being forced to raise wages to recruit and retain staff. As an example, in the restaurant industry, which I've studied and worked in over the last 22 years, we've witnessed 1.2 million restaurant workers walk off the job, citing low wages as the primary reason for leaving since 2021. And we have tracked, actually, with funding from the Gates Foundation, we have tracked 6,000 restaurants, including several hundred in Minnesota, voluntarily raising wages to recruit and retain staff, many of them to well above $20 an hour. So given this marketplace upheaval, where so many workers are saying enough is enough, we need more, I, along with many of the leaders of the federal minimum wage movement, came together over the last couple of years to envision what could be next post-Fight for 15. And what emerged from that is what people around the country are calling a living wage for all, a minimum wage that is closer to the cost of living per the MIT Living Wage Calculator or the EPI Family Budget Calculator, and ending all subminimum wages that exist in our economy. Minnesota does not have many of the subminimum wages that exist in other states, but it does have a subminimum wage for incarcerated workers. And the push is to include all workers that work in a minimum wage that is closer to the cost of living. In Minnesota, according to the MIT Living Wage Calculator, one person in a two-parent, two-child household needs $41.02 to cover the basic costs of food, transportation, and housing. That is it. That is $41 for one parent in a two-parent, two-child household, $21.45 for one adult with no children, which is not a standard we look at because we do think people have the right to have children, and about a quarter of the minimum wage population in Minnesota does have children. You're talking about 120,000 workers, 70% of whom are women, about a quarter of whom have children. So given this incredible momentum around the country and this federal push, national push for a living wage for all, we've seen massive wage increases moving across the country. In Washington, D.C., we won a 300% wage increase for restaurant workers last year, and in Chicago, a 50% minimum wage increase for restaurant workers in October. We're also seeing on the ballot minimum wage increases this year in Michigan, Ohio, Arizona for $18 an hour. Massachusetts is pushing a $20 an hour. And Renton, Washington, just outside of Seattle, just passed a minimum wage of $20.29. Now $20 is moving statewide in Washington State. California just passed a bill in the Assembly for a study bill to study a minimum wage of between $22 and $24 an hour. As you know, they already passed $20 for fast food workers and $25 for healthcare workers. So I'm talking fast to share with you there's incredible momentum around the country for wages to go up and to better meet the cost of living. And that, even at the federal level, is a minimum of $20 an hour. We would hope that Minnesota would join leading states like California and Washington that are leading the overall national push for $20 minimum and hopefully more. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony and for joining us today. Next, we have Lydia Caldwell. Welcome to the Senate Labor Committee. If you'd introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Hello, my name is Lydia Caldwell. I'm a community organizer, a member of the New Justice Project, and an impacted community member. I am an admin assistant by trade, but I have been unemployed for almost a year. Over the past year, I have applied to hundreds of jobs. The biggest hurdles have been finding work that is on the bus line because I cannot afford ride shares like Uber and Lyft, and finding jobs that will pay me enough to afford a basic standard of living. On top of that, I have a medical condition that doesn't allow me to work around chemicals as in the industrial work I have previously done. Due to these hurdles, finding a job that has nearly impossible, and my unemployment benefits have run out completely. My income level at the moment is zero. Being unemployed has completely turned my life upside down, as I have been forced to move in with my mother. I can't take care of my special needs daughter in the process. Raising the minimum wage to $20 an hour would not only give me the freedom and independence to live on my own, but it would give me the chance to provide the life my daughter deserves. As soon as I leave this hearing today, I will hear a call back from an employment agency to determine if I got the job or not. Passing the bill SF-4019 would allow a fresh start and give me the chance to claim my independence. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And next we have Sharmark Hussein. Welcome to the Senate Labor Committee. If you'd please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
I'm Sharmarki Hussein, and I'm here today to support raising Minnesota's minimum wage to $20 an hour. I'm grateful for all the committee members here for hearing my story. In the past couple of years, I've had two jobs. The first one paid $11 an hour, and it was a hustle to get more hours, and my partner and I could never make ends meet. At the end of the month, it was a choice between which bill to try to pay and on the minimum and which bill to skip. The stress of all this took a huge toll on my relationship, and my partner and I had to take a break. It was heartbreaking to have a financial stress drive a wedge between the person I love and to cause me not to be around my child as much as I wanted to. Now I work in a hospital doing frontline work to sterilize equipment between patients. It's high stress work, especially during big COVID waves. I get paid $19.50 and it's still not quite enough. My partner and I have grown back together and we're excited that she's expecting our second child. We barely have enough to make ends meet and never really have enough to save or have a little fun. We really want to buy a house in the Twin Cities where all our family is and where our jobs are, but can only afford St. Cloud housing prices. Things are getting stressful again. I just wanted to be able to afford a modest house near my family where we can raise our children, pay our bills, save a little for the future, and have a little left over for fun. I work hard. Every Minnesotan deserves to be stable like that. I've seen higher wages, like $20 an hour, can make that difference. Please raise Minnesota's minimum wage to $20 an hour and show all workers that they deserve financial stability. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. That concludes our list of testifiers, unless there is anybody else that wanted to offer testimony. With that, I think we'll go ahead and move to discussion, and it is our intent today. We will be laying this bill over for possible inclusion in a labor omnibus bill. Before we begin our discussion, would you like to kick that off with any final thoughts? Senator Mohammed.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and to the folks who came and testified and shared their stories. I think that what I hear from our business community is we don't want any more mandates. But what I hear from our workers is we're not getting paid enough, and so we've got to find the balance of what it means to make Minnesota a place where people can live. We've got hundreds, if not thousands, of people living out in the streets in negative 20 degree weather, and that partly is because our cost of living is not keeping up with the income that folks are making. So, you know, I'm in no place to think that this bill is perfect, but I think if we're going to have a conversation around minimum wage, we've got to talk about what it means to question if $10.85 is enough to live in Minnesota, to have a roof over your head, to provide for your family or not. And the answer is overwhelmingly not. And the other thing that is true, Madam Chair, is right now it is around 10% of Minnesotans that currently earn less than $15 an hour, right? So what we're talking about when we talk about increasing the minimum wage from $10.85 to at the minimum statewide $15 an hour, it's something that most employers currently are doing.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Thank you very much, Senator. Oh, with that, members, I'll move to discussion. Yes, Senator Weisberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess what I'm concerned about is When we increase minimum wage, the employees are going to increase their prices. And if you go to $20 an hour, now people are increasing their prices, and now you're actually making less than you were before. What we could do is decrease taxes, let people keep more money than they're actually making more money. So if you're making $15 an hour right now and we decrease your taxes, you're going to make more money, and it's not putting a burden on employers, and then you'll be able to afford living. I actually have a bill that would help all Minnesotans, not just Republicans, it would help Democrats, it would help everybody, that would get rid of income tax. If you're single, your first $31,000 you make, you would pay no income taxes. If you're married, filing jointly, your first $46,000, you would pay no income taxes. I have a Democrat that signed that with me because that's a good bill. That will help everybody, and that will save you money, and that will help you live. That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to help you. So, yes, people need to make money, but if we can stop wasteful spending and cut some taxes and keep more money in your pocket, that will help. Where if we raise minimum wage, a business is going to put that on to their candy bar or whatever they sell, and then you're just making less. So I have a bill. If the Democrats would take it up, we would save you money today. We could pass that. So help me get my bill heard to actually save people. You pay no taxes on your income tax up to $31,000 if you're single. We have the money. We have a lot of money, and you should be keeping it in your pocket. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Senator Wiesenberg. Senator Mohammed, would you like to respond at all?
Yeah, sure. Thank you. Senator Wiesenberg, I think what you're articulating is you understand that we have an actual issue in terms of people getting paid enough. I think in terms of when we talk about the taxes that we pay, I think we have a philosophical difference. I believe that I personally pay taxes to take care of people who need it. And I think the conversation we should be having is when we had just gone through the worst pandemic in over a decade, that we saw workers rise up and say, we're not getting paid enough, we can't even afford to live in Minnesota. I think the conversation we should be having is why some are making far more than others when they're at the top, and the workers who are actually running those businesses are paying nothing. It is not because the taxes that they're paying. These workers, I haven't had workers come to me and say, I don't want to pay taxes. But what they do tell me is, I'm not getting paid enough at my job, and I deserve to get paid a living wage. So I think we're having a philosophical difference here.
Thank you, Senator Mohammed. It is a timely and good discussion. Yes, Senator Wiesenberg, would you like to follow up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would say that I would bet that everyone sitting behind you would like to pay less taxes. I would assume that. You wouldn't? You don't want to pay less taxes?
Literally keep it.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
That was, I appreciate that question.
Okay.
I appreciate that question, and I think it's an excellent discussion, and it's philosophical in nature, but it's also very practical, because this is the debate that's happening right now in our society economically, right? This is the debate. Is there too much taxes overall, or is the tax burden being fairly felt, right? And I think there's a lot of common ground there, actually.
That's my concern, Madam Chair, is we need to help people out, but at some point, it's in a vicious circle, and we're not getting anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Senator Wiesenberg. And I believe that we also have our testifier, Saru Jariaman, who has joined us with a hand raised, who would like to comment. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you. Thank you.
Thank you. I wanted to respond to both the price and the menu, price increases and the tax issue. On the price increases, I wanted to share that at UC Berkeley, at the Labor Center at UC Berkeley, a group of economists that I've worked with for years actually looked at price elasticity with regard to minimum wage increases. And at that time, we were actually examining a much larger increase. That was for federal minimum wage from $7 to $15. That was an $8 wage increase overall, and a $13 increase for tipped workers who have a federal minimum wage of $2.13. And they found at most, with an $8 to $13 wage increase, at most, you're going to see 11 to 12% price elasticity. for a bill that would phase in a minimum wage increase over several years. Let's say over 5 years, you might see a at most 11 to 12% increase in cost. So a burger that costs $10 might become $11 or $12 over 5 years. And what we have found is that that is the most that prices could increase, and that in fact, those prices do not actually offset the increases that workers experience through the minimum wage increase. Even the Wall Street Journal post-pandemic did a huge study of do price increases that come from increased wages post-pandemic offset workers' wage gains. And what was found is that for the lowest wage workers in the minimum wage bracket, particularly restaurant and retail, who are the lowest wage workers, their wages have been so low and so stagnated for so long that in fact, wage increases that may result in very small, you're talking 11% price increases, do not actually offset the wage increases, because the wage increases are so dramatically important for these lowest wage workers. On the tax piece, you know, appreciate the desire to find kind of common ground. I will say that what we've heard over the years from literally hundreds of thousands of workers is that tax offsets that occur once a year, yeah, cannot help with the daily, monthly bills that need to be paid at the first of every month, your rent, your electric, your all of your bills that need to be paid are not as assisted by a once-a-year tax offset as they would be by an hourly wage increase that, frankly, I just want to close by saying is already being seen and felt in the marketplace. We are already seeing Minnesota businesses paying $20 and up in large scale. A lot of small businesses that are part of our High Road Restaurant Association have said, we're already raising wages far above 20 to recruit and retain staff in this moment. We need a level playing field that will allow all businesses to rise at the same time.
Thank you for your testimony and for sharing your expertise with us as well. Members, yes, Senator Liske.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Senator Mohammed, I agree there's a problem. I'm not sure what the right answer to fixing the problem is. I have a whole bunch of stuff sitting in front of me from researching on what can we do, what kind of problems are there, and I don't know that raising the minimum wage is the solution, but I just want to point out some statistics, first of all, that maybe support some of what you're talking about. Let's just talk about what a $20 an hour minimum wage would be. That's roughly $3,200 a month. That's about what your income would be minus, you know, before taxes are taken out, before any benefits are taken out. The average rent in Minneapolis for the city is $1,366 for the average rent for Minneapolis. So that leaves you with roughly $1,800 a month for car payments, insurance, food, you name it. So it's not very much, and so, you know, $20 doesn't sound like much. And, you know, another statistic that I would worry about, this information's going around, it's actually a study that Zillow did on the national housing market. It costs $106,000, or an average income of $106,000 for a family income to afford an average house in the United States as a whole. That's up 40%, or $47,000, or 80% increase from 2020. While wages are up only 23%, it's basically a pretty significant rise in the cost of housing that doesn't match the cost of wage increases. My problem is as Senator Wiesenberg has pointed out, is that $20 an hour is a problem on the economy side of the equation for the business owners and for employers in general. And so I kind of want to bring up a different study that the Minneapolis Federal Reserve pointed out. And they did a reserve study. They figured out what the impact of the $15 in Minneapolis and St. Paul did. It points out that there was a loss of 29% of retail jobs in the city of Minneapolis. There was a loss of 23% of jobs in St. Paul for the same retail. It points out 41% loss in jobs in full service restaurants in Minneapolis and 30% in St. Paul. And then same thing with limited service restaurants. It was a decrease in 30% of jobs, 45% of jobs in St. Paul. The bigger issue that I have and the numbers that I found more staggering is the amount of average earnings for those same families was actually even more drastic. You're talking about a 14 to 25% loss in retail, a 23 to 39% loss in full service restaurants, and a even more staggering 23% to 59% loss in average income in St. Paul. So in limited service, so you're talking about, you know, restaurants that serve at the counter. So for me, raising the minimum wage may not actually result in an increase in income for those families, and that's something that I find even more concerning. So whilst I appreciate the message and the purpose of what you're trying to do, and I think you've admitted that there's some work that needs to be done on the bill, those are actual concerns that I have with moving forward with the bill as it is.
Thank you, Senator Liske. Senator Mohammed.
Yeah, thank you, Senator Liske. I appreciate that. I think that the things that you have pointed out in those studies aren't necessarily, I don't think they tell the full picture in of Minneapolis since we have opted into a $15 minimum wage. I think what is also true that you and I can agree on is that there's not one solution that one size solution that fits all the issues that we're dealing with. I think, you know, whether we agree or disagree on whether minimum wage and increasing it does help workers and in making sure that they live up to sort of what our living costs is in Minnesota, you know, is there a number that's going to be like, well, $20 an hour, everybody's going to be able to like afford everything in Minnesota? The answer is probably not. And so I think we can agree on that. And I also hope that we can agree that $10.85 is insanely low. And so, you know, as the bill moves through, I'd love to continue talking with you and figuring out what can work.
Thank you, Senator Mohammed. It seems to me that it sort of goes to the question of whether people believe that a minimum wage at all is helpful or harmful. Mm-hmm. We have another member who wants to make a comment as well. But before we do that, I believe that the expert who's joined us to testify, Saru Jayaraman, also has her hand up. Briefly, did you have a comment to add on the point that we're talking about now?
I do. And so I appreciate the data shared from the Minneapolis Federal Reserve. Actually, economists around the country have been referring more recently to what's called a meta study of studies. There's been a meta-analysis of all minimum wage studies across the country, and that meta-analysis, which I'm happy to share with the committee, has shown that there's actually been zero to negligible impact on jobs, job increase or loss, go either way in terms of minimum wage increase.
Oh, shoot. You're frozen. Our internet connection is sketchy today. If you can hear us, Ms. Jayaraman, we would be delighted to have that study. If you wanted to forward it to Senator Mohammed and or to my office, I can go ahead and forward it on to our members. We'll go ahead and move to Senator Grünhagen, if you'd like to proceed.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, thanks for the discussion. I think it's an important one, too. The, you know, I think all of us up here want people to progress into the middle class, to experience the middle, you know, the American dream, own a home, have a family, and prosper in life. I certainly do, okay? And, you know, the thing is, I think there's several things working against people trying to get into the, or working into the middle class. And I'll just name a couple. One is government, you know, government regulations, government excessive taxation, and government destroying our monetary system at the federal level. In other words, the inflation rate is a taxation. It's been about 20% since the Biden administration been in. So your dollar has gone down 20%, so it doesn't buy what it used to. Also, excessive taxation, which we have in this state and in Minneapolis-St. Paul, it drives up your rent. It drives up the cost of business owners, and they pass that cost along to you as consumers. So I think it's important to recognize we need a competitive tax rate, both for our private sector, which will pay higher wages if they have the money to do so, rather than mandating it from the government in most cases. The other thing I'd say, one of the quickest ways to help families who have children is to support school choice. And I had a bill when I was in the House that would have transferred between $12,000 and $15,000 per child to the control of the parent, and it would follow the child. You would have the decision where to spend that money, private, parochial, or public school. You would have money for sports. You would have money to do what you want with your children. So if you got two children, you'd get $30,000 a year rather than the bureaucracy having $30,000 a year and telling you if, when, and what you can do with your child. So there are solutions, but unfortunately, we can't get a lot of those solutions through this state. Last thing I'll just say, I was in the House when they passed the $10.85. I admit it's not a living wage. We are in a tight labor market, and private companies do have to offer higher wages. I'm an employer. I pay higher wages to my two part-time secretaries. And during that time, the Congressional Budget Office, the federal one, came out with a study, and it said if you raise the minimum wage to over $10 an hour, over 500,000 people in our country would benefit. But they also added over 900,000 would lose their jobs, okay? Those are economic laws that go into place. So we have to grow the private sector, we have to have a competitive tax rate, and we need to have school choice for families, so the families control the money rather than the government bureaucracy. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Grunhagen. Senator Mohammed, do you have anything you'd like to add before we move to other comments?
Thank you, Senator Grunhagen. I'm so glad that we can agree that $10.85 is not a livable wage. So we have a common ground there.
Senator Pappas, did you have a
comment? Thank you, Madam Chair. I really appreciate all the advocates that are here today advocating for this important change. I don't think we've raised the minimum wage for a decade. I think this argument about job loss is really outdated. We're really facing kind of a new reality here where we have a worker shortage. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's one of the reasons why we really need to welcome immigrants into our community, because we don't have enough people to fill jobs that are out there already. Now, sometimes there can be a mismatch in terms of skills, which is why we need more job training centers, which we've all been working on. So in the private sector, in order to get, we're meeting with disability people today, and they can't find workers, and they're paying $15, $16, $17 an hour, because that's, if they do have people at that kind of wage, there are people who are working two or three jobs, trying to raise a family, and are exhausted all the time, and not able to provide the kind of services that to disabled people that they want to really provide. So I think it's a long time coming, raising the minimum wage. Minneapolis and St. Paul have done it. You know, the sky hasn't fallen. And it's the least we can do to support the workers that we need to keep our economy moving. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Members, any further discussion? Yes, Senator Liske.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Senator Pappas. The data that I was referencing was actually from a study that just completed in 2022. So I don't think it's that far outdated as it just was released recently. So just wanted to update that part. Thanks.
Perhaps Senator Liske, you could send on the study to us and we can take a look at it. All right. Members, any further discussion on our Senate file 4019 before it's laid over? I'm not seeing any. I just, as the chair of the committee, I want to thank sincerely all of the testifiers who came today to testify on this bill. I personally also believe that this is a long time coming. We've seen decades now of working people being sidelined by corporate America and undermined in terms of their ability to live. And it's been systematic. I can remember when I was going to school in the 80s and hearing this debate about minimum wage, and back then people coming down on minimum wage and devaluing the importance of it. So it was at work even then that they were starting to chip away at it and chip away at people's confidence in it. It's hard to believe that we actually used to have a meaningful minimum wage. I mean, can you imagine if you were paid minimum wage and you were able to live? and provide for yourself. Right now, minimum wage, unfortunately, has become sort of a joke. I mean, nobody can live on that. You know, how low do we go? What kind of a race to the bottom are we part of if we don't raise the minimum wage? So I also agree it's a long time coming, and I sincerely thank all of you for sharing such your personal stories and your own personal struggles with the things, your everyday lives, and how this has an impact on your daily lives and the choices that you are able to make or not make. And with that, Senator Mohammed, I will thank you also for bringing this bill. Would you like to leave us with any final thoughts before we move on to the next bill?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I think one of the things that resonated with me was a woman who came up and was sort of telling her story about how her and her son, who is her child, are making around the same amount of money every single month. And that is one that I resonate with because, you know, personally, I'm a daughter of immigrants. And so growing up, I worked when I was in high school to help out my family. And I remember my mother, who worked at a factory in Chaska, Minnesota, who still works there, by the way, at the time was making about $7.25 an hour. And I was making, as an 11th grader, $9 an hour. That's the story of so many people who come from immigrant background stories. My mother now still works there, and she's been working there since 2009, and she makes $14. So she is one of that 10% of Minnesotans who are making less than $15 an hour. And so it's really important for us to recognize that majority of employees are actually getting paid around $15. Only 10% are not. And that we recognize that those who aren't are working hard, and that we should also, they should keep up with it as well. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Mohammed. And with that, Senate File 4019, as amended, is laid over for possible inclusion in the Labor Omnibus Bill. Okay. Senator Mohammed, we have, due to scheduling reasons, we'd like to be able to handle the workers' compensation bill that is my bill quickly. Are you able to stay and do your second bill after we do that?
Yes, I'll just run to committee and come back. Is that okay?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we are here hearing Senate File 4745. Senator McEwen, you may begin.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I do have an A1 author's amendment for this bill. I would move its adoption.
Okay, Senator McEwen moves the A1 author's amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, the amendment is adopted.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. This bill, as introduced, and the proposed amendment, or the amendment that we just adopted before us today, adopts recommendations made by the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council for amendments to Minnesota Statutes Chapter 176. I am one of four legislative liaisons assigned to the council, along with Senator Utke, Representative Wolgamott, and Representative McDonald. The Workers' Compensation Advisory Council is a statutory labor employer council that negotiates reforms to the workers' compensation system before recommending a consensus bill to the legislature, the goal of which is to improve the workers' compensation process for both businesses and injured workers. This bill and amendment were unanimously approved by the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council and include proposals from the Council's Labor and Business Caucuses, the Workers' Compensation Bar, the Department of Labor and Industry, the Office of Administrative Hearings, and the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals. It contains 38 sections with amendments to Chapter 176, many of which are technical or cleanup provisions. The bill is introduced, and the proposed amendment, or the adopted amendment before us today, includes statutory clarifications and updated references as recommended by the Office of Administrative Hearings, technical changes to certain provisions, clarifying rulemaking authority for Office of Administrative Hearings and the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals related to electronic filing, certification of electronic signatures and interventions, describing when employees can be referred to DLI's Vocational Rehabilitation Unit for certain disputes, clarifying attorney access to workers' compensation claim documents in DLI's technology system, revising the calculation of average weekly wage for short-term agricultural workers, adjusting the maximum dollar limit on workers' compensation attorney fees, amending the calculation of maximum weekly compensation for temporary total disability benefits, describing notice requirements for discontinuation of vocational rehabilitation services, specifying a penalty for charging in excess of statutory allowances for electronic medical records, raising the allowable costs for remodeling awards for permanently and totally disabled employees, updating the penalty amount for violations regarding required notice and payment timelines surrounding the benefit discontinuation process, and changing the time allowed for filing to answer to a claim petition. With me today are representatives from the Department of Labor and Industry, the Office of Administrative Hearings, and the Workers' Compensation Court of Appeals to answer any questions that you, Mr. Chair, or members may have about the bill. And I would just say that I think most of us are familiar with the advisory council that does this work on workers' compensation and know that their recommendations we take very seriously when they come, because they are such a collaborative process, and this bill comes to us with unanimous support from the council. So with that, I respectfully ask for the support, and I would turn it over to members or any testifiers to offer any additional information about the bill.
Sure. And Jessica Stymack?
Yes, thank you,
Did
Chair.
I pronounce that right?
It's Stymack, but Stymack. I answered
okay.
to Stymack.
I apologize.
Thank you, Chair.
Would you like to say anything on the bill, or are you just for technical questions?
Thank you, Chair. I'm here for questions.
Okay. All right. Seeing that, members, any discussion about the bill? Senator Gruenhagen.
Looks like a good bill.
Thank you for that discussion. I would concur. There we go. Who says it can't happen? Senator Liske.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Madam Chair, thank you for all the hard work you put into this. From what I understand, it was quite a process, but there is peace in the valley, as we like to talk about here at the Senate, and it doesn't get found very often, but it sounds like this one is one of those times, and I'm happy to hear about it, so thank you.
Any other members? If not, I will also add thank you for your hard work on this. These are important, very important topics, very important to workers and employers in Minnesota, so thank you for the work you've done on this. Anything else, Senator McEwen?
No, all the work. I would also thank all of the people who put in the work to make this bill happen in negotiations and in the council and in the leadership that they've shown for our whole state. So okay. Thank you very much.
With that, Senator McEwen, would you like to move your bill?
Yes.
As amended,
I believe we did adopt the amendment.
Yes.
Yeah. So yes, Mr. Chair, I would move that Senate file 4745 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to finance.
Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? If not, Senate file 4745 is on its way to finance.
Thank you very much, members.
Thank you.
thanks everybody for the rearranging of schedules quick so that we could handle the workers' compensation bill. And now we will move on to Senate File 3947, which is also brought to us by Senator Mohammed. Welcome back, Senator Mohammed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before you is Senate File 3947. It's an agency bill from the Department of Labor. It modifies the minimum wage statute by eliminating various categories of special minimum wages and increasing the inflator cap to 5%. I have someone from the agency with me, Josiah Moore, who will testify. And I also have the A1 amendment, which creates an effective date for it.
Very good. Would you, Senator Mohammed, would you like to just take care of the A1 amendment right away then?
That'd be great, Madam Chair.
Members, Senator Mohammed has an A1 author's amendment. I would make the motion that it be adopted so we can discuss the bill as Senator Mohammed would like to do. All in favor of adopting the A1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Right, the A1 amendment is adopted. Senator, to your bill. Or Mr. Moore.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Josiah Moore, and I am the legislative coordinator at the Department of Labor and Industry. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of Senate File 3947, which updates the state of Minnesota's minimum wage laws. This bill does only two things. The first is that it removes three of the four lower minimum wages in Minnesota statutes 177.24, the small employer minimum wage, the minimum wage for J visa holders working in hotels, lodging establishments, and resorts, and the youth minimum wage. As of 2024, each of these lower minimum wages is set at $8.85, which is $2 lower than the regular state minimum wage of $10.85. A full-time worker earning the regular minimum wage of $10.85 would have annual wages of $22,568. A full-time worker earning any of these lower minimum wages would have annual wages of $18,408. This bill would eliminate that gap in wages by ensuring that working people in the state are not subject to a lower minimum wage based on their age, the sector they work in, or the size of their employer. The second thing this bill does is increase the cap on the annual increase of the minimum wage from 2.5% to 5%. Every year, DLI is responsible for determining the percentage increase in the rate of inflation and raising the minimum wage by the rate of inflation or 2.5%, whichever is less. In years where inflation is lower than 2.5%, this leads to an increase that matches inflation. In years where inflation is high, this results in a minimum wage increase that does not keep up with inflation. A 5% cap will help the minimum wage keep up with increases to inflation while still preserving a cap that ensures stability in case of years where inflation is especially high. This change will benefit working Minnesotans earning the minimum wage, those who most need to keep up with increases to the cost of living. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of Senate File 3947, and I will remain in committee if there are questions for the department.
Thank you very much. Senator Mohammed, that concludes the testifiers that we have for this particular bill. Would you like to leave us with any thoughts before we turn to member discussion?
No, thank you. I thought Josiah did a really good job of explaining why this is important, so thank you. I'll take questions.
Great. Thank you very much, Senator. Members, discussion. Yes, Senator Liske.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, this bill is very similar to the last one we were talking about with minimum wages, but I see this one maybe having a little more impact, so I'm going to offer the A2 amendment.
Thank you. Senator Liske is offering the A2 amendment. If we could have that amendment distributed to members, if we don't already have it. We don't already have it yet. Okay, well, we're distributing the A2 and also to the author, so the author is able to look at it. Senator Liske, to the A2, if you want to tell us what it's about.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, the A2 amendment is definitely pro-small business. I understand that we're worried about the numbers that we're working on the other bill, and my concern is that if we move small business, who generally is mom-and-pop shops, normally has one or two employees, and those individuals generally are members of their family or their friends, and they are choosing to work at these locations, by installing these new regulations onto them, it may be nothing at one side of the equation, but with all the bills that we've passed recently, there's going to be a significant amount of burden on these small businesses. You've got earned safe and sick time, you've got paid family medical leave, things of that nature are putting a pretty big strain on those small businesses. I'm a small business owner myself. And so I would like to leave the small business exemption in there, and that's what this amendment does.
Thank you, Senator Liske. Senator Muhammad, would you like to comment on the A2?
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Liske. I appreciate it. I'm a big proponent of taking care of our small businesses and making sure that they're not struggling. I think that majority of small businesses across the state support paid family leave and they want to take care of their workers. As far as this amendment, you know, this is an agency bill, and what they're doing is making sure that the $10.85 that we have as far as minimum wage statewide applies to all workers across the board. And so to say that we're going to have some employers pay less than the minimum wage, which, by the way, is not even livable wage, as you've seen, I've got my own issues with it. It's just something I can't support. We're talking about $10.85. And so, you know, Minneapolis, we have $15.85, and the majority of our businesses are small businesses.
Okay, thank you. Senator Liske.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Senator Muhammad, I agree with you in some aspects. I don't believe that most of these small businesses are actually offering only $8.85 per hour. In fact, I offer $15 an hour at my business. It's not something that I find as a sticking point. I just worry that by putting a mandate on a situation for if I were to hire somebody to come sweep my floors for 2 hours, I now suddenly have to pay them $15 an hour, and they're in there for less than 2 hours. And you know, so it's an agreement that I have with them more as a contract situation. They're not necessarily a hired employee, but of course we've been over the misclassification bills, we've been over all these other bills that are playing a role in those types of situations. And I'm concerned that if we change the language there, it's going to apply to employees that I had no intention of paying over that, because they're my friends or whatever, and they just wanted to stop by, and I said, hey, here's $10, and I'm worried about them coming after me saying, well, you didn't pay me enough, you didn't, this isn't minimum wage, and so that's a concern that I actually have.
Thank you, Senator Liske. Senator Muhammad.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate the argument, Senator Liske. I don't think that you know, if somebody's coming to sweep the floors of your office, you know, those folks are coming because that's the form of employment that they do have, and it's important that we look at those employees as dignified workers. $10.85 is not a lot of money, in my opinion. It's not livable wage, and so if somebody, the only job they can get is for them to sweep the office of your floor when you're paying everybody else at a minimum $10.85, I think they deserve that. You're doing it. I think that, you know, we should not look at it as in terms of it's a mandate on small businesses. We should look at it in a way of saying we are treating every worker across the board in our state fairly and equitably.
Thank you, Senator Mr. Moore, did you have something you wanted to add?
Thank you, Chair. Senator Muhammad alluded to this, but I just wanted to make sure we're clear on what the bill does. It doesn't go to that $15 an hour that Senator Liske referenced. It would bring that small employer that we're talking about. The minimum wage would be $10.85.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for the clarification to make sure we're all on the same page. Yes, Senator Liske.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I understand that it does that, but if we change the minimum wage, it does change that number. So the $10.85 might be what it is right this moment, and this bill itself doesn't affect that. But decision-making going forward on these other bills, again, that's what I'm alluding to. It's not, in fact, I have no problem paying anybody at my place of employment more than the minimum wage, right? And that's already what I alluded to. And in fact, I probably wouldn't pay the person $10 an hour. I, in fact, don't have anybody sweeping my floors. Senator Gruenhagen's always key to say the chief cook and bottle washer, and that's me at my business. So a lot of times I'm sweeping my own floors, I'm cleaning my own bathrooms. But the reality of the situation is if I wanted to hire that person, my business can't support, my business model doesn't support that. And so, so small business is something that we have to be really careful about, because the small business model is not the big business model. And that's why keeping the two separate is very important.
Thank you, Senator Liskey. Anybody else to the A2 amendment? To the A2. Yes, would you like to join us? And if you would please introduce yourself for the record. Welcome to the Senate Labor Committee this afternoon, and this is to the A2 amendment. After you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Brad Leto. I'm Secretary Treasurer of the Minnesota AFL-CIO. You know, it relates to the A2 amendment. Just last week, our 76-member General Board voted against all sub-minimums or exemptions to the state minimum wage. So we would oppose this amendment. There's further stuff on the resolution, but I'll just leave it at that to this amendment. So.
Thank you very much, Mr. Liddell. All right, members. On the A2 amendment, all in favor of adopting, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no.
No.
The A2 amendment is not adopted. Members, further discussion on Senate File 3947. Discussions or questions for our author on the bill. Back to the bill. Yes, Senator Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, thanks for the discussion, Senator Muhammad. Yeah, the thing I just want to illustrate here is this. I understand, again, we want people to earn a living at a wage at a rate that can help them experience the American dream. We want, you know, we're all great-great-grandchildren of immigrants, okay? And we want, and obviously we need immigration, both in our state and nation. Legal, by the way, not illegal. That's just, we can discuss that another time. But, and I want people to get ahead. I want a growing middle class, okay? But one of the things you gotta understand is this, is that when you grow government at a rate faster than population and the private sector, you actually are gonna go backwards, okay? I mean, we grew government at almost 40% increase in this state last year, rather than reform our tax code and do some other things that would actually have benefited people. So when you grow government exponentially, 40%, you can raise the minimum wage all you want, but ultimately, and they raise taxes on top of that, another $9 to $10 billion. So what we gotta understand is when that tax increase and that much government shows up in the private sector, the cost of your necessities goes up, okay? And as your cost of your necessities goes up, $20 an hour isn't gonna make it, okay? I mean, so as you grow government at a rate faster than the private sector and population, you're never gonna get ahead. And then you come to government and say, well, raise my wage. By the time we raise your wage, when we grow government exponentially, the cost of your necessities, whether it's rent or property taxes or whatever it is, you're not gonna catch up. You're gonna be in the same situation you were before. Now, the federal government doesn't help by printing up trillions of dollars that we don't have to devalue your money. So, to a certain degree, it's like a fox chasing its own tail around a tree, okay? You're never gonna catch up. What we have to do is apply economic laws, all right? There's actually economic laws that apply. We have a great state with great people, but we're breaking a lot of those economic laws. Now, productivity and technology has helped us to be able to break those laws. But at some point, when we grow government at the rate we're doing, they're not even gonna help. So please think that through. We want people to earn a living. I want them to pay their rent. I want them to buy a house. We're going the wrong direction. Last point. last year in the Housing Committee, they had a study of about 15 states in central Minnesota or central U.S. In Minnesota, to build the average house was $523,000. I got a copy of this. If you built the same house in Iowa, it was $370,000. In Michigan and Illinois, it was over $100,000 cheaper. South Dakota was $350,000 for the same house. So we have, in government, we have promoted regulations and laws to artificially inflate the cost of everything. And no matter how high we raise minimum wage, you're not going to catch up. So please think about that, and I appreciate if you'd support cutting taxes. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Gruenhagen. It sounds like you're asking Senator Mohammed to wave her magic wand on all inflation, but Senator Mohammed, I'll toss it back to you.
Oh, thank you, Senator Gruenhagen. Wow, that was a lot. But I would say that I think you and I have a common understanding that $10.85 is not a livable wage. What this bill does is it doesn't actually increase the $10.85 to anything higher than that. It just says it should apply to all employers. So we're applying it to small employers, youth workers, as well as training wage. Do we think that solves every issue that we have in terms of our economy? Absolutely not. I think you've said a lot, and we've got some fundamental differences, and that's okay. I pay taxes to take care of the folks who need it the most, and I think we disagree on that point, but thank you for bringing it up.
Thank you, Senator Mohammed. Very briefly, Senator Gruenhagen.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, thank you, Senator Mohammed. Right. I guess my point is, in a nutshell, if we don't get the growth of government under control, we could raise the minimum wage to whatever we want, and it's never going to be enough. Okay, because government is artificially inflating the cost of necessities and everything in our society. All right? That's what I'm trying to get at. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. And I think we all did hear from the expert and economist in the last bill who did talk about the amount that prices would raise in comparison to raising the minimum wage. And I think also, I think that the more that we hear from economists who do know about economic principles and about have looked at these studies, we know that actually keeping the minimum wage at something that is meaningful is extremely important for working people and for making sure that the floor doesn't fall so low that we find ourselves in the place that we are now, where we're running to catch up after years of neglect. So with that, any further discussion from members? I'm not seeing any. We're going to lay the bill over. Senator Mohammed, thank you for bringing the bill. Any last thoughts that you'd like to leave us with?
Yeah, I just misspoke a little bit earlier, so I want to correct that. The training wage would stay the same as in $8.85. We would be increasing the summer worker the summer work travel, as well as the youth wage. And so thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate you for taking this into consideration, and hope we can continue to work together.
Very good. Thank you very much, Senator Mohammed. With that, Senate File 3947, as amended, is laid over for possible inclusion in the Senate Omnibus Bill, Labor Bill. And with that, the Senate Labor Committee is adjourned for this afternoon. Thank you, everybody. Sorry.